I'd like to read some verses from the book of Psalms. Three short extracts and commencing in Psalm number 27. Psalm 27. It's good to be here again. We appreciate the privilege of being here with the Lord's people. Now, Psalm 27, and start to read at verse 9. Hide not thy face far from me. Put not thy servant away in anger. Thou hast been my help. Leave me not, neither forsake me, O God of my salvation. When my father and mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Now, some verses from Psalm 61. Psalm 61. Another Psalm of David, according to the title. Verse 1, hear my cry, O God. Attend unto my prayer. From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee when my heart is overwhelmed. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I, for thou hast been a shelter for me and a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert of thy wings. Selah. And a third and final reading for now from Psalm 143. Psalm 143. And again we'll come into the middle of the Psalm, starting at verse 7. Hear me speedily, O Lord, my spirit faileth. Hide not thy face from me, lest I be like unto them that go down into the pit. Cause me to hear thy loving kindness in the morning, for in thee do I trust. Cause me to know the way wherein I should walk, for I lift up my soul unto thee. Deliver me, O Lord, from mine enemies. I flee unto thee to hide me. Teach me to do thy will, for thou art my God. Thy spirit is good. Lead me into the land of uprightness. Quicken me, O Lord, for thy name's sake, for thy righteousness' sake. Bring my soul out of trouble, and of thy mercy cut off mine enemies, and destroy all them that afflict my soul, for I am thy servant. Now that will be the reading that I want to take just for a brief word that's upon my mind tonight at the start of the meeting. You are probably aware that the order of books in the Old Testament in the Hebrew Bible is rather different to the order that we have presented in our English Bible. But just leaving that for the moment, the Hebrew order is very interesting and instructive. But just taking it as we have it in our English text, the 39 books of the Old Testament, you know that right in the middle of those 39 books, we have 5 books of poetry. There is poetry in other parts of the Old Testament, but predominantly, these 5 books at the center of the Old Testament are books of poetry. They are preceded by 17 books of history, and they are followed by 17 books of prophecy, and right settled in the center are these 5 poetical books. Now you're also very well aware that poetry is the language of experience. It's through poetry that some of the emotions of the soul are verbalized. And the rhythm and the language of poetry allows that expression of emotion, which perhaps is not allowed in other forms of communication. Now, I think it's very, very important that we have these books of experience just here in the middle. You see, I'm speaking now about an Old Testament believer. In the experiences of life, he was always to remember history. And in the experiences of life, you've always to remember prophecy. When you're in the difficulties of life's days, it's very easy to forget where you've come from. And it's easy to forget where you're going. And God has suspended these books of experience just in between the books of history and prophecy. You see, the nation that is represented in the book of Psalms, they had a grand history. It began with the blood of the Lamb and the opening of the sea. They had a history such as no other nation shared. They not only had a grand history, they had a glorious hope. And they can stretch forward in their faith to the manifestation of a glorious kingdom. Now God said, in all the experiences of life, don't forget to look that way. And he said, don't forget to look that way. Of course, we have a great history. We have a history that takes its rise at Calvary. It involves an empty tomb. It involves the great day of Pentecostal power. Dear believers, we have come from grand beginnings. And thank God we have a great destiny. Eternal glories gleam afar, and they nerve our faint endeavor. And here we are in what at times can be the doleful days of life's experience. But we have a grand past, and we have a bright prospect. And God expects us to allow both of those to filter into the experience of life and to allow the knowledge of both history and prophecy to inform our present experience. There are five of those poetical books, as you know, and they're often joined together. And just very, very hurriedly, and I'll come to what I want to say just in a second or two, want to say mainly. The book of Job tackles the mystery of life. Those imponderables that take place, and you grapple with them, and you cannot understand them or unravel them. The book of Job helps us with life's mystery. The book of Proverbs encapsulates life's maxims. And those pithy sayings of the book of Proverbs contain a maximum of wisdom from heaven in a minimum of words upon earth. Life's maxims. The book of Ecclesiastes, and you'll be ahead of me in this, it explores life's meaning. Is there any meaning to all the conflicting circumstances of life? And vanity and vexation of spirit. The Song of Solomon takes us to life's marriage and all the colour and all the beauty involved in that. And the book from which we have taken our reading tonight, the book of Psalms, is giving to us life's music. And in this Hebrew hymn book, every note upon the scale of human experience is struck. Some of the happiest notes, some of the notes that are most delightful, others that are most doleful, the highest and the lowest, the extremities of the scale, and every little part in between. And that's why the Lord's people, as you know, very often appreciate the Psalms, because we can find in these precious poems an echo of some of the emotions of our own souls. Not only do we have a song book itself, but the book of Psalms, perhaps more, I couldn't say for sure, but perhaps more than any other part of the Bible, not only does it contain inspired songs, but it has also inspired other songs. Many of the great hymns that we sing are based upon truth that is contained in the Psalms. One of the stories I just mentioned now very briefly. There's a man, famous man, Joseph Henry Gilmer. He was a man who featured quite highly in the educational system in North America. In fact, as far as I know, there's a chair in English literature named after the man to this present day. He taught both Hebrew and English. Quite an illustrious figure in education, not so well known as a hymn writer. But in any case, when he was a young man of 28, he was asked on one occasion to speak a word to the Lord's people. And he took up Psalm 23. He had spoken of it before a time or two, and he had a path clearly laid out in his mind and in his message. But for some reason or another, on this occasion, as he warmed into his message, his spirit seemed to get carried away with the great wonder of the fact that the Lord leads. He leadeth me. Paths of righteousness. He leadeth me by the waters of quietnesses. And as he moved into verses 2 and 3 of the psalm, everything seemed to multiply in his mind and in his ministry, and he never got his message finished. And it just seemed to impress him the hand of God in the lives of his people, guiding at times in paths that are most unusual, and yet doing it for his name's sake and for his righteousness' sake. So the meeting finished, and he went to a friend's home afterwards for some refreshment, he and his wife. And the conversation was going on in the home, and while the conversation was being enjoyed by all, Mr. Gilmer took out a piece of paper and he started to write a little poem. People talked, but he was meditating and writing. He handed the sheet of paper to his wife, and she looked at it and put it inside her Bible or whatever she had with her, and that was that. 3 years later, he was asked to take another meeting in another place. And he arrived up at the front just as we were doing there. And he lifted the hymn book to leaf through to try and get a hymn suitable for opening the meeting. And lo and behold, his poem had now become a hymn. And he was greatly puzzled by this, because to his knowledge, he had never shown his little poem to any other human being except his wife. But they tell me that wives sometimes do things and don't always give account of what they're doing. It's a phenomenon that may not have reached this country, but it certainly happens in America, I'm told. But when he got home, he asked his wife, he said, she said, Joseph, I forgot to tell you, she said, I submitted that to a local magazine. She said, I thought it was so good. And, of course, when it got into the local magazine in Boston, USA, the eye of William Bradbury, the famous composer, he caught it, and he thought those words are good, and he put music to it and so on and so forth, and he turned it into a hymn, and we're singing it to this present day, and you could even find the hymn in such a notable production as the Believer's Hymn Book, so it must pass muster. He leadeth me. Oh, blessed thought. What words with heavenly comfort fraught. Where'er I am, where'er I be, still 'tis God's hand that leadeth me. It could well be that as I speak tonight in this little congregation of the Lord's people, there might be someone here and you never thought 10 years ago that the Lord would lead you over the path that has been taken. But here you are. And it is a comfort to our souls that even when we cannot explain the geography of life's landscape or life's experience, it's good to know that still the guiding hand of God is supervising every detail, every height, every hollow, every twist and every turn. And I think it's a very precious and a very comforting thing. Now, on 7 occasions, and I'm certainly not going to look at the 7 of them tonight, on 7 occasions in the book of Psalms, you get the little prayer, lead me. Lead me. And the psalmist brings his case before the Lord, and he feels that in the multiple choice of life's decisions, he needs guidance. He doesn't trust himself, to make mature decisions. He feels that if he is left to his own wisdom, he could very easily stumble and stray. He's conscious, it appears to me, at least in some of the references, he's conscious of a waywardness in his own heart. And he says, Lord, leave me. And it seems to me also that the very expression of the prayer on these seven occasions, it not only indicates a weakness and a possible waywardness, it indicates a willingness. He said, Lord, I'll put my case into your hand. And he said, I'll accept the guidance of your providence, and I'll accept the direction of your will. Now, having just mentioned that, and you can follow the seven through, I have no intention of doing that, I've selected three for a particular reason that will become obvious just as I go through the little message. In Psalm number 27, the psalmist prays, in verse number 11, he says, teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. He says, Lord, I would like that you would put my feet on a level path. There are difficulties. You only need to read the psalm and you become aware of some of the difficulties. He mentions his enemies. He mentions his foes. He mentions his adversaries. He mentions the fact that there's the possibility his father and mother would even forsake him. He mentions his fear. And in the midst of all those difficulties, he says, Lord, now I would need a plain path. Some translate it a level path. I don't think it's so much a level path in the sense that it doesn't slope. It may be speaking about a path like that. But it could be an incline. But he wants the surface to be level and smooth. He doesn't want great big boulders on the road. Because he said, Lord, if I was asked to walk across a path that had such an uneven surface, he said, I might go down. He said, I could go over in my spiritual ankle. And he said, if I stumbled and fell, he said, all the enemies of the Lord would stand clapping their hands, and they would have a great laugh if I fell. He said, Lord, I don't want to fall. I don't want to stumble. He said, I would not like to think that my fall would in any way reflect upon your character. So he said, lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. I've already alluded to the fact that in the psalm there are quite a number of words for quite a number of references to enemies, and they're using different Hebrew words. You might notice if you're following a Newbery Bible or maybe some of these other translations with helps in them, it says, because of mine observers. There's a Hebrew word, for example, that means enemies, and it comes from the root verb that means to hate. An enemy is a person who hates you, but that's not the word here. He says, Lord, I'm very conscious that there are people watching. You know, just, I suppose that would be a wholesome request for us all to make tonight in the meeting. The place where you work, the business in which you're involved, the people that you do have contact with in the curriculum of your life. You know, dear Christians, many of them watch us. And they're just waiting. They're just waiting for the Christian to stagger. Some that I once knew who walked with a very steady step. And as you saw the steadiness of their Christian course, you said, well now, he'll go places. He's doing well. He's making steady progress. He'll travel far in the things of God. Suddenly something happened. And he just sprained his ankle. and he was left sprawled out on the road of Christian experience, and the enemies of the Lord talked about it for a good while. He says, now I don't want to give those irreverent, uncouth enemies an excuse for talking. He said, Lord, I don't trust myself. It's not a man that walketh to direct his steps. He said, Lord, can I ask you to lead me in a level path? I hope the Lord will help us all. And it might be a useful little request for us to lodge at the throne of grace, that the Lord would just keep us on clean ground, where we wouldn't sprain our ankle, where we wouldn't stumble in our step, where nothing would happen that would disgrace his name. Well, that's as much as I'd say about that. When you get to Psalm 61, it's a rather different, it's not altogether a different situation, but it's a rather different request that is made in Psalm 61. He tells us in verse number 2, from the end of the earth will I cry unto thee when my heart is overwhelmed. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. He said, Lord, it's not now a level place. He said, I would like to go to a lofty place. He said, these things are, they're overwhelming me. He said, I do not have the resources that are required to meet the demands of the pressures of life just now. And he said, I would need you, Lord, to lift me out of that and to plant my feet on the rock that is higher than I. Once he would get his feet, I take the rock, of course, to be a reference to the Lord himself. And the psalmist referring to his confidence in the Lord, and he's asking the Lord to renew and to reinforce his confidence. And once a man would get his feet planted on that rock, it would be a good platform. He would no longer find himself to be sinking. He would have firm ground beneath his feet. It would be a good protection. It would lift him away above the trouble. It would also be a good perspective, because from that lofty rock he could scan the whole landscape beneath, and he could get a fresh perspective on things. You see, I've discovered in speaking to the Lord's people that when you find yourself in difficulty, and when your life is surrounded with problems, you usually can't see above them. You become obsessed with them. You become engrossed with them. The whole thing begins to close in upon you. And you're living on a level with your problems, and you can see no way out. Thus the psalmist says, he says, Lord, I need you to lead me to the rock that is higher than I. You know, I believe there are times in believers, in a believer's experience, when the Lord can take him and can bring him to a level of communion that he has never known before. And from that vantage point of close communion with God, the believer can look on the same circumstances. It's not so much that the Lord changes the circumstances, but he changes our view of them. It's not so much that the problems disappear, but once we get a little higher, we find a different perspective. He said, Lord, I need to get a higher look at these things. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Wanting to be in a level place, wanting to be led to a lofty place. And the final reference, and I'll be concluding just in about 5 minutes or so, the final reference is in Psalm 143. And again, it's another one of those psalms of difficulty, a psalm of David. Again, surrounded by problems, possibly one of the psalms of the Absalom rebellion. And he says in verse number, just to come to the verse that I want, verse number 10, he says, teach me to do thy will, for thou art my God. Thy spirit is good. Lead me into the land of uprightness. Well, this is a very instructive little text and I just make a comment or two upon it. He said, "Now, Lord, in this path that I would love to travel," he said, "I'm going to need the help of thine Holy Spirit. Teach me to do thy will. Thy Spirit is good. Lead me in the land of uprightness." Now, it's an unusual expression. It's related indeed in some ways to that first expression that we had in Psalm 27. But this expression, the land of uprightness, is the very same expression that we have in the book of Deuteronomy. I think it's chapter 4. And it's talking about the inheritance that the sons of Reuben had on the other side of Jordan. And it says that they had the plain country. If I remember correctly, Mr. Darby translated the plateau. It was that higher land that stretched right up into Gilead on the east of Jordan. It was a lengthy elevated plateau. One of the later translations, and I'm not recommending it, is the ESV, if you want to know which one it is. They translated the table land. The table land. Well, we'll bring those into Psalm 143. He said, "Lord, lead me into a plateau. Lead me onto the table land." I don't know if that other fellow got his... I don't know if Johnson Oatman was thinking about that when he said, "Lord, lift me up. Help me stand. Heaven's higher table land. Higher place than I have found. Plant my feet on higher ground." I think that's something like what David was thinking about. He said, "Bring my soul out of..." He said, "Lord, I'm hemmed in." And he said, "I would like to think that out of this experience, I would be brought into a large plateau of open country." You see, it is a fact of life, dear Christians, that sometimes the Lord enlarges us spiritually when we are being pressed in materially. Maybe domestic pressures, maybe economic pressures, maybe industrial pressures, maybe marriage, maybe assembly pressures. And it's true what is said in good old Darby's rendering of Psalm 4, "Thou hast enlarged me under pressure." He says, "Lord, in all this pressure of my life," he said, "by the energy of your good Spirit," he said, "I would like to think that I would be led to a higher level and led into a wider experience, a plateau, a table land of spiritual experience, more expansive than I've ever experienced before." Now that's more or less my little message tonight, dear Christian. Remember, the Lord is guiding in your life. He still guides. He still leads. It's maybe not just so easy to say. No, it's not. The man wrote it in his hymn, but I'm not just... And we sing it. We sing it. And sing it thoughtfully, I know, but it's not so easy to say in reality, "Lord, I would clasp my hand in thine." Never murmur or repine. Content. Whate'er my lot should be, since still 'tis God's hand that leadeth. Did you ever think God would bring you down as far? You know, I was thinking in a different connection altogether for maybe another message in another realm. But when Israel came out of Egypt, just in Exodus 13 it is, it says, "The Lord led him about." You know, the Philistines were there, and the Lord took them out round. It's the very same expression that we're getting when Moses is about to die in Deuteronomy chapter 32. He says about the Lord, "He found Israel in a waste, howling wilderness. He led him about." But you say the Lord should always take the straightest. The straightest, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. "Hand of the Lord is the great Lord of omnipotence. Why does he not make a straight line?" No, sometimes the Lord, I tell you, take some shopping round about us. It says he led him about and he instructed him. You do remember in your life, And I say this not with a glib tongue. But remember that the easiest way is not always the safest way. Sometimes if you're walking on a very easy path, you can become careless. You can drop your guard, and it's just then that maybe a fall could be likely. Maybe if the path is a little bit twisting and a little bit demanding, you're on full alert. Dear Christian, life is not easy for many of the Lord's people. But let me say this, in the twists and turns of your meandering life, the Lord is still leading. He's instructing. You would say, I would like to have it easier. Yes, but the Lord's not just interested altogether in easy lives and soft people. He's interested in teaching people so that they might develop and mature, and may God grant that we might respond in our souls to His leading, bringing us to a level path. Bringing us to a lofty path, please. Bringing us into a large place, a large plateau of spiritual expansion. And as I said, then, He will guide, and He'll see the journey through, because it's the very same term that's used in Psalm 73. The psalmist says, Thou shalt guide me with thy counsel, and afterward receive me into glory. Soon the path will be trodden. We'll step into scenes of eternal glory. And the Lord that took us by the hand of conversion will never let us go until we all together have reached the security of our final destination. And even when we get there, I know it's not speaking about us, but it's applicable. You'll not be too hard upon me. You say, well then when we get to heaven, He let us go and that'll be it. No, even in scenes of glory, what is said about another company of the redeemed, I think that we'd also experience it. That the Lamb that is in the midst of the throne, He shall lead them to living fountains of water. Dear brethren and sisters, there are springs perennial and eternal waiting us on the other side. May God grant in a world where people are staggering about the drunken dukes of the devil, we're glad to be amongst the Lord's people, under the government and under the guidance of His hand. And may we say, as these men said on 7 occasions, and I've just looked at 3 of them, Lord, take my life and lead me into the level path, the lofty path, the large path of thy choosing. May the Lord bless. I'm very much a desperate sinner. I'm really ashamed to come to Scotland and say that, but I hope the Lord will bless, for these things are far reaching. It's not theology tonight, but you know, life's not all theology. It's not. And may God help us to respond to His graciousness.